Hi, I'm the bit before the theme music. And you know what the best bit about being the bit before the theme music is? Yeah, as soon as the music starts, I can go home. It's brilliant. I'll see you later. Oh, sorry. Run the theme music. I'll see you later.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, says team, a trusty old Red Rider carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. Yeah, that's me. I'm Jack. What's your name? Don't care. Right, do you want to do the interactive bit? Here it comes. What is that on your shirt? Really? That's unbelievable. I'm putting on a show here. Would you go to the opera dressed like that? No, you wouldn't. So what are you doing coming in here to my show dressed like that? Oh, did you? Really? Okay, that's cool. No, that's fine, that's fine. And scene. What do you think of that then? Rubbish. Right, boys and girls, I've got a packed show. And when I say a packed show, I mean a packed show. It's packed right in here. I crammed it all in. I shoved it in. Like, you know when you're wrapping a Christmas present, yeah? And you've got to cram it all in. Yeah, you don't have to, do you? Because you've got a box. You don't have to cram it in. But I do. That's the difference between me and you, okay? Right, can I start this show or not? Oh, can't I? Okay then. Hang on, we've done the interactive bit. Let's start the show with this. We're starting with this.
I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing. I'm in a store and I'm singing.
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole.
So, boys and girls, as you all know, and I say as you all know, you might not know because you might not listen to the show normally. I don't know what you've been doing. This might be your first time of listening. Probably the last, isn't it? Let's face it. As you may or may not know, I have two young daughters. Now, I'm trying to get them to learn about classic music. Not classical music. Forget that rubbish. No, I'm talking classic music. So I've taught them about Elvis and the Beatles. We actually play a game where I'll sing a song and they've got to tell me if it's Elvis or the Beatles. Do you want to play it now? Tough. We're not playing it. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So I'm trying to get them into music. So they've got a bit of knowledge about pop music. And only the other day, I realised they probably don't know any songs by U2. Can you believe that? Like, U2 were probably the biggest band of the 90s worldwide. Probably, possibly. One of them, definitely. And their longevity, they're still going, I say going strong, they're still going. Their first single came out, I think, late 70s. So, yeah, they've been going all that time. And my girls don't know any of their songs. I've always been a fan. I love their music. So the biggest songs are probably With or Without You, or I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, but they still have massive hits. You've heard of U2, I'm guessing. If you haven't heard of U2, go and listen to some U2. So the other day, me and Robin, we had a long car journey, and she's going through my CDs. Yes, I still have some CDs. And she's like, oh, what's this one? I was U2, put it on. So we listened to U2's greatest hits. And I started thinking, they never really did any Christmas stuff, did they? But then I remembered that they did a version of Christmas Baby Please Come Home. Don't know if you're familiar with that. Have a listen to a little bit of it. They originally recorded that in 1987 during a sound check, and it was put on this compilation album called A Very Special Christmas. If you're not familiar with A Very Special Christmas, they've released a load of them over the years, but it's a charity album, Christmas themed, to raise money for the Special Olympics. So that's when it originally came out. Then they re-recorded it in 2004 for the Complete U2, which was like a digital box set they did. And when they re-recorded it, they had Darlene Love doing the backing vocals. Yeah. Anyway, I knew about that. I thought, I wonder if they've added anything else. And it turns out they have. But what's interesting about this, because this segment is always meant to be a Christmas not so classic. That's what I talk about, not ones that are massive classics that you've all heard of. I try and find stuff that you might not have heard of. Well, a lot of you won't have heard the original that they covered. Now, here's the original. Here it comes.
They said there'll be snow at Christmas. They said there'll be peace on earth. But instead it just kept on raining. A veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir. And the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell. And eyes full of tinsel and fire.
So that song is called I Believe in Father Christmas, and it was released by Greg Lake in 1975. You might not be that familiar with Greg Lake, but you might be more familiar with Emerson, Lake and Palmer, that he was a member of. That was a group. And yeah, he released that as a solo effort. But then also later on, it was re-recorded with Emerson and Palmer as part of an Emerson, Lake and Palmer tune. But U2 have done a cover of that. So U2 have done a song you've never heard of covering a song you've never heard of. I say you've never heard of it. If you're in the UK, you've definitely heard I Believe in Father Christmas. I did play it a good few years back for my US correspondent, Scott Newman, and he wasn't familiar with it at all. So I know that it's not massive, definitely in the States. I don't know if it's popular in other countries. Anyway, why not have a listen to the U2 version? Here it comes.
They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. But instead it just keeps on raining. Veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember on Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir. And the peal of a bell. Christmas tree smell, eyes full of tinsel fire.
So I found a bit of information about the recording of it. So it was November the 26th in 2008, and they had the band in the studio. And Ned O'Hanlon, he produced the video for it. This is a quote from him about it. He says, about an hour and a half ago, we got the band upstairs into the studio from a standing start. The four guys never played, never heard it, didn't know the lyric. And now we have a video in the bag, which is quite extraordinary. Well, I find that hard to believe that they'd never even heard the song before. It's a pretty big classic in the UK. And I know you two have spent some time in the UK, so I'm sure they would have heard it at some point. So when it was first released, it was part of the Red Wire magazine. Don't know what that is. Don't know what Red Wire magazine is at all. But then in 2021, they released it as a standalone digital single. But I don't know if it was released in the UK or in the States. It was released apparently in Australia and Japan. But on Wikipedia, in the discography for U2, there's no record of it charting anywhere. So I don't know if it charted or what happened with it. I wanted to share this one with you because this is one of the biggest rock bands of all time, and they've never really done a lot for Christmas. All they've really released is these two cover versions, Christmas, Baby Please Come Home, and I Believe in Father Christmas. So let's have a little bit more of it. Here it comes. Can't lie to you kids, I definitely prefer the original version, but it's nice listening to their one. Something different, isn't it? If you want to check it out, it's on YouTube, of course. But there you go, that was this week's Christmas Not So Classic. But now, boys and girls, we're doing this.
When are you, Christmas?
Where are you Christmas? Edinburgh. 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 I am still reeling from my very funny pronunciation of the capital of Scotland. I showed my twangy Midwestern U.S. roots and only wish that I had an English accent like Jack, or even a southern one from the States, as anything you say then just sounds much more melodic and pleasant. So I think this episode I'm going to visit some place safe and very American, and one I hope that I can articulate in a much better fashion. This location comes from our Scandinavian American correspondent and Christmas quizmaster, Benji Pearson. He said that you can find Christmas in, of all places, the dramatic landscapes of the Badlands of South Dakota. There, in the shadow of Mount Rushmore, you will find the Christmas Village, a massive 7,000 square foot, enchantingly festive Christmas store open year-round that Benji describes as like walking into a German Christmas market, without the smells of the freshly baked goods and the beer, of course. You will find ornaments galore, over 10,000 different ones, including custom-made Mount Rushmore and Native American styles. Plus, it's a great respite from the extreme and unpredictable weather of this Great Plains state. And perfect for our friend Benji, there is also the House of Scandinavia, located right outside of Rapid City. He said it was especially Christmassy for his family because they celebrate Swedish Christmas traditions. Most everyone will also enjoy the broad array of Christmas-themed products from Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland. Plus, they have lots of Viking and Norse mythology and lore, especially for those Yule lovers. Finally, Benji says that you have to visit the Rushmore Candy Company and its sister store, Candyland, right down the road. They both have a great, nostalgic candy store vibe, and Benji says it feels like you fell into a giant Christmas stocking. There is a jaw-dropping amount of different types of candy, including modern candy, traditional candy, and then unique items like Christmas-covered pickles, bacon, and Twinkies. He said that you won't be able to resist picking up a few of these uncommon stocking stuffers, no matter the time of year. Now, if you know of another place full of untamed festivity and wild holiday grandeur, you shoot it over to Jack, he'll pop it off to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
Okay, one more time. Edinburgh. Not Edinburgh. Edinburgh. Or Edinburgh. Goodness. Great work there, of course, as ever. And also, thanks so much to Benji Pearson for sending that through. Bob will be back in a bit. In the meantime, we're doing this. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. This is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, quickly, we're going to run through last episode's scores with 2 points. That's right, 2 points. It was Gerald Case Blanchard. Got to say, Gerald, well done for sending that through. A lesser man would have gone, nope, I'm not going to tell him. But no, well done. You stood up, you were proud, you scored 2. It's pathetic. With 3 points was David Ferguson. With 4 points was Jeannie Mulligan. With 5 points, we got John Gomez, Nicola McLean, Benji Pearson and Jack Unverfirth. With 6 points, Mary Pulte and Pamela Wooten. With 7 points, Mickey Mike Westphal. And with 8 points, boys and girls, a staggering 8 points. I think I only scored 7, so well done for beating me. It is... Now, it's come through as Sarah... The email came through as Sarah and Martin Goodman, but I know it's just Martin Goodman because he emails me every time. I don't know if he's used a different email or why it's come through as both of them, or maybe it was a team. It is like a pub quiz, so maybe they had 2 in their team. I don't know. But anyway, well done, Martin Goodman, for scoring 8. Well done. Now, earlier on, I was giving my good friend Bob Baker a hard time because he has no idea how to say Edinburgh. Well... Shame on Bob and shame on me, because I received this email from Jeannie Mulligan. Right, I'm going to put on my best Irish accent, okay? Oh, good God, what language were you speaking? Sorry, that was me being funny. I'm not going to do an Irish accent. I like to think I can, but I'm not going to embarrass myself. And when I say embarrass myself, I'll be there thinking that was really good. Jeannie Mulligan is going to be in Ireland going, what is this racket? That's not how us Irish talk. So I'm just going to do it in my voice. Imagine it's Jeannie talking now. Oh, good God, what language were you speaking? It's pronounced Nullig Hunna Dit. Not whatever Christmas alien dialect you invented. Honestly, I think points should be deducted for 1. That brutal pronunciation of Nullig Shona Dwit. Yeah, that should have been Nullig Hunna Dit. And she's put in brackets, the Irish are still recovering. And 2. Referring to it as Gaelic language instead of good old Irish. She's given me a final score adjustment. I've scored 6, but Jeannie only scored 4. And she's put, which basically makes me the moral winner here. And I can agree with that. Yep. Look, I'm the first person to put my hands up and say I have no idea what I'm talking about most of the time. So when I see Nullig Shona Dwit written down, I'm going to read out Nullig Shona Dwit, even if I should be saying Nullig Hunna Dit. And also, if in the book it says Gaelic, I'm going to say it's Gaelic. Again, because I'm an imbecile and I don't know what I'm talking about. I appreciate you coming up and making me look like a fool, Jeannie. I do appreciate that. It's always nice to hear from her. She's glorious. Wonderful girl. All I can do is apologise. So, do you want to hear the apology? Here it comes. You ready? I'm really sorry. And that came from the bottom of my heart. The bottom of my heart. Or can I put it another way? That came from my bottom. No, I'm jesting. Thank you for correcting me, Jeannie. I do appreciate it. And I am sorry that I said something wrong. But at least I didn't call Edinburgh Edinburgh. So there's that. Right, let's get on with this week's quiz. Question number 1. True or false? Mince pies are made with beef mince. Easy one, isn't it? It's either true or false. You've got 50-50 on that one. Question number 2. Oh, okay. Everyone apart from people in the UK, and probably including people in the UK, aren't going to like this one. But it's a bit of history and it's interesting. So even if you get it wrong, when you get the answer, you'll be like, interesting. Okay, question number 2. Which ruler of the UK cancelled Christmas in the 17th century? Who was that? Okay, question number 2. In which century did Christmas trees become widely popular in the UK? Not when they were first introduced, just when they became widely popular. Was that the 13th century, 15th century, 17th century, or the 19th century? So we know it was an odd number, but how odd? Which century? Oh, we've got another true or false one now. True or false? There is a plant called the Christmas cactus. Is that true? Is that false? Next one. What unexpected object brings good luck if you find one in your Christmas pudding? Yeah, what brings good luck if you find it in your pudding? Okay, oh, next one. Alongside cream and cocoa, what is the other main ingredient of Bailey's Irish cream? Irish. You better get that one, Jeannie Mulligan. I call it Bailey's Gaelic cream, just to annoy Jeannie. Yeah, so alongside cream and cocoa, Bailey's Irish cream. You must be familiar with it. It's like a drink. Bailey's. Drink it at Christmas. Quite thick. Like me. Next one. What was the name of the man who invented Christmas crackers? Any ideas? No? Tough. Okay, next one. Which of the following is not common in Christmas cake? This is British Christmas cake as well, not like a Christmas fruit cake you might get overseas. Again, don't get angry if you get it wrong because it's in the UK. You're listening to a podcast from a bloke in the UK. UK? Okay, see what I did there? Yeah, it was brilliant. Okay, so which of these don't you get, right? Is it A, brandy, B, marzipan, C, peanuts, D, raisins, or E, a small cat named Kevin? Oh, sorry, I made that last one up. It's just one of the other 4. Okay, because we all know you get a small cat named Kevin in every Christmas cake, don't you? Next one. Which of Santa's reindeer has a name that means lightning in German? Okay. And finally, what do you add to champagne to make Buck's Fizz? Now, Buck's Fizz is a cocktail, very popular on Christmas Day. You drink it first thing in the morning. Gets you going. So you've got champagne. What's the other thing? There you go. Those are your 10 questions. Are you ready for your 10 answers? Question number one. True or false? Mince pies are made with beef mince. Well, the fact of the matter is, once upon a time, they were. But these days, they are not. Nope, you won't get any meat in your mince pies. But the reason they're called... I could explain this to you, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to go and say, go and listen to episode one again. I don't talk about mince pies, but it's a great episode. It's probably episode two, I think. It might be episode three, where I do talk about mince pies. You could learn everything you need to know about them. But there's no beef in them. Question number two. Which ruler of the UK cancelled Christmas in the 17th century? Well, that was Oliver Cromwell. So Oliver Cromwell took over for a brief length of time. And then after he carked it, we got the king. Because he got rid of the monarchy, got rid of the kings and queens. That was King Charles I. And then after he carked it, King Charles II came back, said, all right, I'll take over from here. And he gave us Christmas back. Yay! Next one. In which century did Christmas trees become widely popular in the UK? Well, that is the 19th century. Yeah, the 1800s. That's when they became widely popular. Mainly, they say, due to Prince Albert and Queen Victoria. Next one. True or false? There is a plant called the Christmas cactus. Of course there is. Do you know why it's called a Christmas cactus? Because people put presents under it. And it's got a star at the top. That's not true. But it does flower around that time of year. That's why it's called the Christmas cactus. And I'd covered that in a previous episode, so you should know that. Next one. What unexpected object brings good luck if you find one in your Christmas pudding? Well, that is a four-leaf clover. If you're in your Christmas pudding and you get a four-leaf clover in it, you are guaranteed good luck for the rest of your days. Or a sixpence. Or a small coin, because no one's got sixpences anymore, have they? Yeah, coin. My mum puts 20p in. 20p. What can you buy with 20p? Not a lot. It always annoys me as well. Put a quid in there. Put a blooming quid in there, woman. I'd rather win nothing than 20p. Seriously. It's not worth getting a cracked tooth over. I mean, I don't mind cracking my tooth for a quid. Nice. But for 20p, who do you think I am? Right, next question. Alongside cream and cocoa, what is the other main ingredient of Bailey's Irish Cream? It's whiskey. It's a whiskey-based drink. Okay, next one. What was the name of the man who invented Christmas crackers? His name was Tom Smith. I will accept Thomas Smith, but that's it. If you put Joe Cracker, you're wrong. Okay, that was his cousin who stole the idea and changed the name. That's what happened. That's why they're called crackers. Originally, they were called Smithies, but then his cousin Joe Cracker flooded the market with his cheap copies, and before you know it, everyone was calling them crackers, and Tom Smith was furious. This is all just rubbish, isn't it? Tom Smith called them crackers. Tom Smith invented them. Right, next one. Which of the following is not common in Christmas cake? Peanuts. You ain't getting no peanuts in a Christmas cake. They don't belong there. Get them out. Which of Santa's reindeer has a name that means lightning in German? That is Blitzen. Donder and Blitzen. People say Donner and Blitzen. It's not Donner and Blitzen. It was originally Dunder and Blixen. I've told you this before. It's like I'm repeating myself. It was Dunder and Blixen, which means thunder and lightning. Anyway, and the last one. What do you add to champagne to make Buck's Fizz? The answer is orange juice. Yeah, it's a cocktail that you have on Christmas Day in the morning. Glass of Buck's Fizz, then another glass, Keep going until you're under the table. Nice. So I scored 10. Yeah, I knew all of those because I'm incredibly clever. So let me know how you got on. Send me your scores. I don't care what you scored. Gerard Case Blanchard, he's a doctor. Okay, or at least it says that in his sign-off, doctor. He probably isn't. He probably just puts it there to make himself feel clever. Well, you ain't that clever because you only scored 2. But he told me he scored 2. So if you only scored 2, let me know you only scored 2. If you scored 0, what's wrong with you? Really? Come on. No one got 0 in that quiz. There was 2 true or false ones. Come on. So send me your scores. You know the deal. You know the email address. I'll tell you at the end of the show. I'll tell you now if you want. TotalChristmas@gmail.com. Send me a score. Now we're doing this. So boys and girls, earlier, Benji Pearson was kind enough to send us his Where Are You Christmas. And he also sent me another email. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but in previous years, For Halloween, Benji has dressed up as ghosts from A Christmas Carol. So one year he was Jacob Marley, another year he was the Ghost of Christmas Present, and this year, well, he wants to be the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and he's asked me for any pointers. Let me read out what he wrote. It's time for me to start thinking about my Halloween costume, so of course I come to you for advice. I'm thinking I'll go with the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come this year to round out my collection of Christmas Carol ghosts. I don't think I could really do the childlike Ghost of Christmas Past too well. That's a really tricky one. I've only ever seen one version that I thought was just like in the book. Only once have they managed to pull it off from the book. There's been some decent versions, but from the book. Anyway, he's put, my problem is I don't want people to think I'm just the Grim Reaper or Death. From what I've seen though, the actual text doesn't give the ghost much description. I was thinking I could make an Ebenezer Scrooge headstone to carry around and one skeleton arm to point at things with. But what else would I definitely need to do to avoid people thinking I am just Death? Well, I'm going to read out the description that Dickens gives. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came near him, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which concealed its head, its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible, save one outstretched hand. But for this, it would have been difficult to detach its figure from the night, and separate it from the darkness by which it was surrounded. That's pretty much it. That is pretty much it. There's another bit later where he mentions that the folds incline slightly as if the head is nodding, but that's pretty much all you get. So, yeah, difficult. Now, one thing I want to draw attention to, Benji, you've said I could make an Ebenezer Scrooge headstone. I think that's a good idea. I think that's the best idea. But you've also put I could have one skeleton arm to point at things with. Well, I don't know about that. You see, I'm not going to say a skeleton arm. It does mention a number of times that there was a hand coming out of the robes pointing at things. It doesn't say it's skeletal. So maybe, if you like, you could use your own hand or maybe get another one with just in a pointy shape. But it's got to be a hand. It's got to be an arm. It's having it skeletal, I think you're just going to make it seem more like the Grim Reaper. Other than that, Benji, I'm at a loss, mate. I really am at a loss. I mean, you could do your best to try and scatter gloom and mystery, as it says in the book. I don't know how you do that. So, yeah, I hate to admit it, but on this one, I really don't think I can be any more help. It's a really tricky one. I think anyone that sees you, they are going to think you're the Grim Reaper, unless you hold the gravestone of Scrooge in front of your face when you meet anyone. Go, look, see this before you judge my costume, and then you can put it down and point at it. And then they'll know who you are. Yeah, it's a difficult one, but it's a great choice for costume because, you know, you won't have to put in as much effort as you did when you were the Ghost of Christmas Present. And I can tell you, boys and girls, he put in loads of effort. And when he was Jacob Marley, he looked fantastic. Really, really did. And I'm sure you'll look fantastic again this time. You could have one of those little name tags, you know, the one that says, hello, my name is, and then you fill in the bit that says your name and you put the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. You could do that. That might be a little incongruous, though, with the rest of the outfit. But it's a thought, isn't it? Yeah, I'm sorry, Benji. I really wish I could give you more, but I can't. I read the whole chapter through again just to see if there's anything else I could come up with, and there was nothing. So, I've let you down. Now let's do this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
We have a motto that we all live by every day at the Tiki Bar. We recognize and agree that lips that touch liquor touch other lips quicker. I know that Jack has already talked about the 13 Yule lads in Iceland and their mom, the troll Grilla. These tricksters and gift bringers provide such an interesting and fascinating festive tale. But I knew about them before Total Christmas. I have a picture book called Fortnight Before Christmas by Brian Pilkington. Brian is an Icelandic artist and author who has been illustrating children's books since the 1980s. This colorful story not only introduces readers to Icelandic Christmas customs, but it also shows the affection that they feel for these quirky and mischievous holiday characters. And it also includes Grilla's smelly stew recipe. But the other thing it does for us Me, being an American Yule lad who might be called head scratcher or meaning misser, it presents us with the concept of the word fortnight in its title. When asked, most of us in the U.S. will say that Fortnite is either a Taylor Swift album or a popular video game that was released in 2017. What it doesn't mean for us is a two-week time period. The word fortnight originates from the Old English phrase 14 not, meaning 14 nights. This reflects an ancient Germanic custom of measuring time by nights rather than days. Senite was another common word in use during the Middle Ages, meaning 7 nights, and months were measured in moons. It was common in this period to describe time in terms of nights and winters, not in days and years. So the question is, what was so significant about a 2-week period that it got its own word? The use of fortnight dates back to at least the 14th century, and it reflects the historical significance of the lunar cycle for agricultural practices. People used the moon to measure the passage of time, and they split the month into two parts, each with 14 nights. A fortnight is a half moon. It comes from the number of days it takes for the moon to go from full to half and half to new. These 2-week periods were relevant for planting purposes, and so they became an important marker. It is surprising that even with our strong agrarian experience, fortnight never took a foothold in the States. In fact, you will hear some Americans complain and ask why Brits say fortnight instead of 2 weeks. But this is like asking why say a month instead of 4 weeks, or a year instead of 52 weeks. These one-word labels are both descriptive and convenient. What is kind of a shame is the use of the term fortnight has been going down in the UK. The English have been saying 2 weeks more frequently since the 1970s. Some say it is the result of the Americanization of the language. Ironically, at the same time, the word fortnight has seen an uptick of use in the States over the past 10 years, and this is influenced by British pop culture, with the Harry Potter books and movies, and also the predominantly British cast, crew, and phrases used in Game of Thrones. However, it's still safe to say that most Americans do not currently use the word fortnight. You know, I'd love to tell you more, but we're kind of running out of time. Come back in a fortnight for the next episode. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Again, I had no idea that the word fortnight wasn't widely used around the whole globe. I thought everyone was saying it all the time, even when they weren't talking about 2 weeks. I thought I'd just say it because it's a nice sound. Fortnite, nice. Yeah, that's a fantastic one. Great work again, Bob. Boys and girls, I have told you this every episode since Bob started his podcast. I'm going to tell you again. Bob has a podcast. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans. He talks about foreign Christmas films. Films that you might not have heard of. Something new. Something exciting for you to watch at Christmas. Listen to his podcast. It's glorious. Now let's do this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, this episode's version of A Christmas Carol is an interesting one. It isn't really a version of A Christmas Carol as such, but it will all become clear as I explain it to you. So, this is an episode of a TV show called Cimarron City. There was only one series of this show, and it started in September 1958. It ran for 26 episodes. Now, Cimarron City in the show is a boom town in the Wild West, and it's north of Oklahoma City, and it's really rich in oil and gold, and it's aspiring to become the capital of the future state of Oklahoma. That was the deal. That was the setting for it. And this was a time when Western TV shows were really popular, and when it came out, it was up against Have Gun Will Travel and Gunsmoke. It didn't fare too well in the ratings, and I guess that's why it only lasted for one series. I won't lie to you though, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was alright, the episode I watched, this episode, but then of course it's about a Christmas carol, so of course I'm going to enjoy it. So I'm just going to lead you through how the episode goes. So it opens with a bunch of men all sitting around, and they're planning the Founders Day celebrations, which are round about the 4th of July, I believe. It's in July anyway. And their plan is to actually celebrate this Founders Day, but with no women interfering with their plans. But then there's a couple of ladies listening at the door. Have a listen to this.
We won't let them know what we're planning until we're all through, so they can't get their fingers in it.
Well, Mr. Silas Perry, we'll just see about that. Keep the women out of it, huh? That might not be quite as easy as you think.
Men, let's drink to that. A Founders Day celebration without any interference from the women.
And it cuts to a bunch of ladies all sat round planning the Founders Day. Now, one of the ladies comes, her name's Beth. She's one of the main characters in it. And she's played by an actress called Audrey Purcell. And I don't want to lower the tone of this podcast, if that's possible, but I've got to point out that she's got incredibly pointy boobs in her outfit. Okay, I've said it. There, I've said it. It's out there. Okay, it's something I noticed. Can we move on? She comes up with the idea of doing a play. And it's a play that she'd done once before, and she still had the scripts for it. And everyone's like, oh, what's this play called? And this is what she says.
It's a ghost story called The Christmas Carol.
Yeah, did you hear that? The Christmas Carol. Not A Christmas Carol, The Christmas Carol. What's that about? So, and you're thinking, hang on a minute. Well, can I get this straight? Can I get this straight? This is July, and they're doing A Christmas Carol. Yeah? Well, listen to this.
Oh, but Beth, this is July. Wouldn't it seem kind of funny to be having a Christmas play in July on Founders Day?
I thought of that, Ida, but there isn't time to get another one. Besides, I didn't think you ladies would object if your husbands were instilled with a little of the Christmas spirit ahead of time.
So there you go. They're doing it, no matter what you say. And then it pans out and there's a bunch of blokes just sat out in the hallway, just all looking miserable because the women have taken over, which I thought was quite funny. Then we cut to this bar, and a drunk bloke comes in, and he's a proper classic drunk. You know the kind I mean, a staggering, he's singing a song, but he's just staggering around like a proper drunk bloke, like no drunk person you've ever seen other than on TV or in films. And he's a character called Prue Wickham. He's walking around singing a song about stealing chickens, and then the sheriff comes in. The deputy sheriff comes in, and his name's Lane Temple, but he's played by a guy called, you ready, right? John Smith, the most basic name in the British language, John Smith. That's not his real name, okay? His real name is Robert Errol Van Orden. And you think, so what, big deal? Here's the thing. His agent, whose name was Henry Wilson, was also the agent of Rock Hudson. That's not Rock Hudson's real name. He got him to change his name to Rock Hudson, make him sound more butch, yeah? And he's taken Robert Errol Van Orden and turned it to John Smith. And Wilson was quoted as saying, well, he's the only John Smith in the business. Yeah, I just thought that was really interesting. Anyway, I'm not going to go into most of the actors because I'd not heard of any of them. There's only one, actually, that I was familiar with, and I'll come to that in a bit. So, he comes in, the sheriff does, and he arrests Prue Wickham for stealing these chickens that he's just been singing about, and he gets locked up. Now, Prue stole these chickens from a guy living in Elk River. So the marshal from Elk River comes and takes Prue Wickham off to Elk River the next day. And as he's getting on the horse with his handcuffs on to go to Elk River, his wife comes up. She's like, oh, what have you done now? And she's got her son Avery with her. And the little boy attacks the marshal. He's like grabbing hold of his leg. He's like, quick, Dad, you can make your escape. And the dad's just sat there on the horse just watching. He's not going to try and run away. And the mum's like, get off him. But the little boy won't listen to his mum. He'll only listen to his dad. And so the dad eventually goes, come on, son, get off him. So the kid lets go. And they ride off to Elk River. Now, the mum tries to talk to the little boy, saying, look, you know, you need to be a good boy. You don't want to be like your father. Your father's no good. You've got to be better. Anyway, then, as they're walking off, these three blokes come running in the other direction, and they all run into the sheriff's office and jump into the jail cell. And they get him to lock the door. He locks the door, and then Beth comes in, who we mentioned earlier, the one who wants to do the play. And she goes up to Lane, the sheriff, and another guy called Dodie, and gives them scripts And they're like, what's this? And she's like, oh, you're going to be in my show. And these are your scripts. Now, I'm just looking for these three other guys. And Lane's like, oh, why are you looking for them? She's like, well, they need their scripts as well. And he's like, well, if I'm doing it, they're doing it. So he goes and gets them out of the jail cell. And they're all like there going, oh, because they don't want to be in the play. But she gives them their scripts as well. It's all very funny. My delivery's not doing it justice. So then they have an audition for Tiny Tim. We cut to the audition and there's a kid there on stage reading. He's not reading very well at all. And then Avery, you know, Prue's son, yeah, the kid we just mentioned, he's watching this going on and he sticks a pin in the end of his shoe. He's sitting in the chair behind the sheriff, deputy sheriff, and he kicks the sheriff up the bum with the pin. And the sheriff turns around and he's like, well, he screams, he jumps up and screams, then turns around and Avery's like acting like nothing happened. Do-do-do-do-do-do. And then it's Avery's turn to read the lines. So he goes up and he's reading out the lines and he's doing it really well. But then halfway through he's like, Mum, do I have to read any more? And Beth is like, don't you want to be in the play? And he's like, nah, this is rubbish or whatever. I don't know. And so even though he's done it really well, she chooses one of the other kids. Not the one that was reading really rubbish at the start, but some other kid called David. As everyone's leaving, she calls back Ida, so it's Avery's mum, Prue's wife, and she offers the understudy role to young Avery in the hope that David, you know, is going to be fine. And she says that, you know, he can help with the building of the sets and getting this play ready and everything. So sort of give him something to do. And his mum's like, oh, that'll be great. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Right. So at this point, do you understand what's happening? It's not a version of A Christmas Carol. It is a show in which they are putting on a version of A Christmas Carol as a stage show in the Old West. You get that? Cool. So then the next part of the episode is the rehearsals. And they got the first rehearsal. And you've got the mayor, whose name's Matt. He's one of the main characters in the show, apparently. He plays Scrooge. And you've got Lane, who's the deputy sheriff. He's playing Bob Cratchit. And she sends Avery off to get a couple of things to use, like to look like a fireplace and a bucket for the coal. And then she sends him off again to get a ruler. Because, you know, when Scrooge grabs his ruler in the book, yeah, where he as he goes off to get this ruler, he gets a long yardstick and he sticks a pin through that and he comes running up and hands it over to him. And at this point, let me say that there's no nephew Fred in their production. All of Fred's lines have been given to Cratchit. Have a listen to this.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge.
Ah, humbug.
Christmas, a humbug, Mr. Scrooge? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas indeed. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
See, that sounds like it's Scrooge and Fred talking, but it's actually Scrooge and Cratchit talking there. Anyway, then Cratchit goes to get a bit more coal. Scrooge hits him with the ruler and it's got a pin in it and it really hurts. And they all know it's Avery, but they don't do anything about it. They're just trying to turn a blind eye. Then we got some more rehearsals. Have a listen to this.
We had all promised Beth to help Ida with her problem child. And Beth, of course, she held us to that promise, believing that we should set a good example for Avery and that this would be more effective than accusing him. Actually, the boy behaved pretty well most of the time, but every once in a while something would happen that could only have been Avery's work.
Yeah, then we got a bit with the Ghost of Christmas Past, and it's an interesting way they've done it, actually. I didn't mind it. I thought it was okay. So the guy's mainly dressed in white, pretty much all white head to toe. But on top of his head, he's actually got a lit candle. I thought that was okay. I mean, very unlike it is in the book. But they were trying, and I appreciate that. Then we get another bit in the dress rehearsal where young David, who's playing Tiny Tim, he falls off the stage and he breaks his arm. Oh no, that means he can't be in the show now. Who saw that coming? Yeah, so who are they going to get instead? Well, Avery reads the part and he does it perfectly because he's the understudy. Everyone's really impressed and he says, well, here's the problem. I'm not going to do it. And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to do it unless you get my dad out of prison so he can come and watch the show. Well, Beth asks Matt, because he's the mayor, if he can sort it out. And this is what happens.
My pa's in jail, and I'll do anything to get him out.
Matt, you could do it.
Let him force me into such a thing? Not on your life.
Oh, Matt, you know how much this play means to me, how much it means to everyone.
Beth, you can use any tactics you want, but I'm not going to Elk River.
and that's definite.
Yeah, and then we cut to Matt and Lane talking to the marshal, saying, can we have Prue Wickham out of jail for one night? And the marshal's like, yeah, okay, he agrees, as long as he can come along. So he's coming as well to make sure that Prue doesn't try and do a run or anything. So the marshal takes Prue back to his house for the daytime before the show starts in the evening. And to be honest, they should have just taken him to the sheriff's office where they could put him in the cell, but they didn't. So he, Prue, is like in his bedroom and he's packing a bag. And his wife comes in and she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm packing a bag. You go and keep the marshal busy. I'm going to get out of here. I'm going out the window. Well, she slaps him around the face and she says, I'm not having this. I'm not happy. Okay, you committed the crime. Do your time. And if you don't come and watch the show, I'm going to tell the marshal that you're trying to leave. And he's like, oh, I'll watch the show then. So then we cut to the night of the show, so that evening. And Avery still hasn't stopped being a git. He mixes up the prompt sheets for the ladies there to prompt people if they get their lines wrong. Just not very nice, this kid, to be honest. He's really unlikable. Yeah, real git. So then Prue and Marshall and Ida are sat in the audience and Prue goes out and then the Marshall hasn't even noticed he's gone. And then he's like, well, hang on, where is he? Where is he? And then Prue comes back. He's like, I just went out for a bit. I'm here. It's all right. Don't panic. That's important because we need to mention that later. And then we don't get to see much of the show at all. We just get one or two snippets of scenes that we hadn't seen before. And the first one we get is The Ghost of Christmas Present. Now, I should have mentioned this. The Ghost of Christmas Present is a character called Tiny Budinger. Now, what happened was, in one of the early episodes, there was a Carl Budinger, who's a real bad guy, and he's played by the same actor, a guy called Dan Blocker. And he gets taken to prison or killed, I don't know. And then two episodes later, his twin brother turns up. I don't know if they're twins, actually, but his brother turns up, played by the same actor, and now we've got Tiny Budinger. Yeah, he was a really nice guy, unlike his brother. Like I say, both played by Dan Blocker. And Dan Blocker, are you ready, boys and girls? He played Hoss in Bonanza. So he's the only one I'd heard of out of the whole cast. Then they got this hilarious bit where the Ghost of Christmas Present, Hoss, out of Bonanza, says, climb on my back and we'll fly. And so Scrooge climbs on his back, and then they got the blokes backstage all trying to hoist him up on this rope, and they're all pulling, and another two blokes come up to help hoist him up, and eventually they hoist him up a little bit and they swing through the air and they just knock all over the whole sets, so they have to put it all back up together again, which is actually really, really funny. So then we get The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and it's funny because he comes up. Let me play it for you. Listen to this.
Well, who are you? I said, who are you? Well, who are you?
I forget.
I'm the Ghost of Christmas to Come.
Oh, yeah. I'm the Ghost of Christmas is to Come.
So, when he comes up, he's not speaking. And I thought, oh, that's good. He's not speaking. Turns out, the only reason he's not speaking is because he's forgotten his blooming lines. Yeah. So I thought they'd actually, like, done it justice and had the Ghost of Christmas Present not talking. Turns out, yeah, well, I explained it. He forgot his lines. You got the lady backstage trying to prompt it, and she's just shouting out all the wrong lines because someone's messed up her sheets. You would have thought she'd noticed by this point. We're right near the end of the show now. At some point, she's got to notice the sheets are wrong, hasn't she? Yeah? Clearly not. And then we get the final scene with Scrooge coming to visit the Cratchits, and he gives them a turkey. And that's the very end of it. And they're all bowing. And as they're bowing, Tiny, the Ghost of Christmas Present, is talking to Lane and Matt, Scrooge. He said, I saw Prue earlier when he went out. He stole a horse. He's put it at the back of the theatre. And he's going to use it to escape. So they're like, right, we better do something about this. Then Beth comes up and she gives a prize to the best performance. And she gives it to Avery, the world's most annoying boy. And the prize is a dog. And boys and girls, a dog is for life, not just for Christmas. Luckily, this is the middle of July, so it's not Christmas. Yeah, but then Avery admits to all the bad things he did, like, you know, putting the pin in the ruler and all the other little things he's done. I didn't talk about all of them because I couldn't be bothered. And he gives the puppy to David, the boy who broke his arm, which I thought was an interesting touch. So then everyone's milling about. While they're milling about, the marshal can't find Prue, and they all go outside, but they're just watching, right, in the dark, and they see Prue, and Prue goes and gets the horse that he's stolen and takes it back to where he got it from. And they're like, oh, what? He's actually changed. Yeah, have a listen to this.
Looks like he's having a change of mind. He's tying that horse up again.
Well, I never would have believed it.
That's why we wanted you to see it, Marshal. I think it would be a big mistake to take that man back to jail now.
Oh, I can't turn him loose. Why, he's been tried and convicted for chicken stealing and sentenced to jail for 6 months.
Why don't you talk to the judge who sentenced him? Have him commute the sentence.
Well, how can I do that? I'm the judge of Elk River, too, you know.
So then Matt, the mayor, the guy that played Scrooge, he says to the marshal, look, how much for those chickens? And he's like, $24. And Matt's like, look, if I give you the $24, why don't you just let Prue go? He's not tried to escape. I guess he's changed his ways, has he? And so the marshal decides to let Prue go and then go back home to his wife and kid. And then we get this line, which I actually thought was quite funny.
Sure is a warm night for Christmas, ain't it, Tiny?
Sure is, little fella. Sure is.
And the very last scene is everyone in the hall singing Auld Lang Syne. And that's the end of it. And here's the thing, boys and girls. This was released on the 20th of December, 1958. So my question to you is, why couldn't it just been Christmas? Why did it have to be the middle of July, Founders Day? They released it at Christmas on TV. They're doing a Christmas carol. Why not just change the story? I don't know. I don't know why they decided to do that. It's not a version of a Christmas carol, but it is centred around a Christmas carol. And I think we're meant to think that Tiny Tim was sort of redeemed, because at the end he admitted to what he'd done wrong and he gave the puppy to another lad. And also, Prue, who was going to try and escape, decides not to escape as well. So something was going on, wasn't it? Now, if you want to check it out, it is on YouTube. It was 50 minutes long and I didn't mind it, but it's not really a version of A Christmas Carol. So if you want to watch it, you know, I'm not going to stop you. That was this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. And that is it for this episode. I really hope you've enjoyed it. Again, I don't have a recommendation because I'm still listening to the same podcasts I've been listening to for the last few weeks. So I want to say a big thank you to Bob Baker, of course, Benji Pearson for sending in his Where Are You Christmas, and also Jeannie Mulligan for correcting my pronunciation. Thank you for getting in touch, guys. Thanks, of course, to everyone that sent me their scores. If you haven't sent me a score yet, okay, because you should have done it straight after the quiz, but if you haven't done it yet, do it now. Do it right now. The episode's ending. You might as well. Get your phone out. Send me that email. If you want to get in touch, it's totalchristmas@gmail.com or the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'm going to be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love you. Merry, happy Christmas.
Is there something I can do for you?
I'm looking for a girl.
A girl? Hey, we all!